Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and thanks for tuning in once again to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. If you're not already connected with us yet on our various social media outlets, we invite you to do so by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at ePodcast Network. Today, we're speaking with Liz Serra, chair of the nonpartisan National Women's Business Council appointed by the president. And Liz, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Well, thank you so much. I'm delighted for the opportunity.
And of course, we're certainly delighted that you took the time to be with us here today. So tell us how the National Women's Business Council was formed and why.
Sure. So back in 1988, President Reagan signed legislation that actually created the council. An interesting side note is that at that same point in time, which really wasn't that long ago, we're talking a little bit over 30 years ago, if a woman business owner wanted to take out a commercial bank loan for her company, she needed a male relative to co-sign that note. If her father wasn't alive, she needed an uncle or a grandfather, or if she had a son or a nephew. Kind of ridiculous. So the same legislation that created the council did away with that ridiculous requirement. And I'm sure that the thinking from some very forward-looking women at the time who really lobbied for such a council to be formed had in mind that other ridiculous requirements were on the books across the country that were unnecessarily holding women back from starting companies and getting their companies off the ground. So when the council was formed, there were some very precise guidelines on the makeup of the organization. So we have a board of 15 people, 8 of whom are women business owners of businesses of all types and sizes. 4 of those women are of the current president's party, and 4 of those women are of the other party. In addition, we have 5 women that are presidents of women business organizations. And add to that, we have a chair that is appointed with each new president. And the mission entirely of this council, which is a small federal organization, is to advocate for women business owners around the country, and every year by the end of December to provide very specific recommendations to either Congress or to the White House or to different federal agencies on things that they can do to help women in their journey to starting companies and growing the ones that they have already in place.
Certainly some fantastic information to kick things off here today. Now, we understand you just issued an annual report. Tell us about your angel tax credit recommendations.
I personally am extremely excited about that. I've been an angel investor in the Washington, D.C. area for 7 or 8 years now, putting my own money into some hopefully very promising and soon-to-be successful technology startups. But the difference, as many people may not be familiar with what is an angel investor and what is a venture capitalist, the venture capital firms use other people's money, and angels invest their own money. So with this particular piece of legislation that was introduced by Senator Wyden of Oregon about 6 or 8 weeks ago, it would provide a federal tax credit against your personal income tax return for a percentage of any investment that any individual makes into a startup. The thinking here is there are great pockets of innovation around the country for technology or other types of innovations. And we all know what those are, starting with Silicon Valley, then to Boston, then to New York and D.C. But there are parts of the country where we have kind of a lack of both innovation and a lack of investment dollars to help kickstart companies getting off the ground. So our feeling is that with a nationwide federal tax credit, we can benefit small towns and rural communities that all have the successful doctors, the successful attorneys, the successful car dealerships who may have never considered investing in startups in their local community. But if we can encourage and motivate them through this tax credit to put money into the local entrepreneurs, be they female or male, then we're helping build the small business community, not just on the coastal areas, but throughout the country. And I'm very hopeful that we can get this piece of legislation passed during this congressional session and implemented so that more people can take advantage of it and more businesses will benefit.
I'd say so for sure, and that is outstanding as well. How do women from minority groups do in terms of getting business loans? Talk to us about that. Give us some highlights there.
Well, women in general are doing very poorly in getting business loans. Some of the data that we've been able to look at indicate just in the category of SBA, Small Business Administration-backed loans across the country. And those are loans that the SBA backs through selected banking institutions. So the SBA doesn't make loans, but the SBA will be a backer of loans provided by certain banks around the country. Women are getting less than 5% of those loans. So the questions that we ask are, number one, why is that? Is it that women are subjected to different review standards? Is it that more women are not applying to get these loans in the first place? Well, we've done some roundtables around the country, and what we are hearing from what I call the ecosystem partners of the business and entrepreneurial communities around the country, and those are organizations like Women's Business Centers, like Entrepreneurship Centers of Colleges and Universities, SBA offices, and other support partners. We're finding that many women startup founders who are applying for bank loans have very poor personal credit scores. In fact, less than 700. In addition to that, they don't have very adequate, let's call it personal finances. So when bankers are looking at these two pieces of information, they are absolutely hesitant to provide a business loan when the personal credit history of that female founder isn't what it needs to be. So we're digging into this in this calendar year to really understand how widespread this is. And then we will absolutely be having a series of recommendations on how we can correct this and what parties we can get involved to help women understand the value of a good credit score and a good financial housekeeping, both on their personal as well as business front.
And of course, Liz, we appreciate all you're doing in the space. Thanks so much. Today we're joined by Liz Sarah, chair of the nonpartisan National Women's Business Council, appointed by the president, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, Liz, how does the council encourage more women in STEM-related fields?
Well, we're looking at a number of initiatives that can actually help women understand that starting a company doesn't have to necessarily be related to your own personal expertise or academic background. One of the members that we have added to our board was someone that I purposely handpicked because of the role of the organization, and that organization is the Association of Women in Science. And they're doing quite a bit nationally to encourage young girls from grammar school and to high school to consider careers in science and architecture and construction and engineering related areas if that is what their inclinations are. When I look at my own entrepreneurial journey, I was a co-founder of a software company, actually two different software companies, during the 90s, you know, ancient history. But my background has nothing to do with computers and engineering and software development. I wouldn't know software development if it walked in the door. But my background is all in business and marketing in particular. So when I joined with my two co-founders, each of the three of us brought a very unique background to the table. Mine, obviously, business, sales, and marketing. One of my co-founders was our tech guru, and the third one was sort of our money source. He was a former executive at a large consulting firm. So when we're talking to women around the country about opportunities for startup enterprises, we're trying to make it clear that you don't have to be a computer science major in order to start a tech company, or you don't have to be an architect to start your own architectural firm necessarily. You could be a finance major, you could be a lawyer, you could be an HR executive. As long as you put a team together of people with the necessary skills, because as we all know, companies are made up of people with different functional area strengths, and it's the combination of the team that makes the company successful. The other thing that we're looking at are the support networks that are already in place, one in particular through the Small Business Administration, which is called SCORE. And SCORE is a volunteer network of former business executives, many retired, who volunteer their time to coach and mentor startup founders. Well, we'd like to see the SCORE body of mentors include far more diversity than it currently does. We'd like to see more women who have run and started companies in engineering or science or architecture or construction or those related STEM fields, because we recognize that young women who are seeking coaches and mentors can relate better to look-alike mentors. So women are seeking more women coaches. Women in STEM areas would benefit by having a coach or a mentor who has been there and done that.
And that certainly does make a lot of sense there. As we conclude, what obstacles are there for women in rural areas to start a business?
Well, beside the typical standard hurdles that all startup founders face, which is access to capital and support systems to get their companies off the ground and products into the market, the rural communities face the geographical challenges. We've done a couple of roundtables in both Idaho and Iowa, and in both of those situations, we had women that drove an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, just to be able to attend our roundtable, participate, and contribute their voice to what's holding them back in their areas. So geographical challenges are a very big one. They don't have the luxury of hopping in an Uber and in 5 minutes being at an incubator or an accelerator with access to workshops and free speakers that might help them on a subject that they're struggling with, whether it's putting a financial P&L together or putting a roadmap for product development for their offering. So we're looking at ways that we can bring in the ecosystem partners to play a greater role in rural communities, whether it's the entrepreneurship centers at community colleges and universities, whether it's the women business centers, of which there are about 150 around the country, that offer free mentoring and business advice to women that want to start companies. So I think there's a greater role that we can help jumpstart by the organizations that are in some of these communities to do far more outreach to women who are interested in an entrepreneurial career.
Again, Liz, we appreciate your joining us here today on behalf of the National Women's Business Council and, of course, all that you're doing in the space. And for the information shared here today as well, most helpful. If listeners wanted to get more information on the National Women's Business Council, where is the best place online to get more information?
Well, thank you for that plug. We would love for people to sign up for our newsletter. Just go to the website, which is nwbc.gov. Please connect with us on LinkedIn. We have LinkedIn pages. Connect with us on Twitter. We have a very robust Twitter presence. And I would invite any of your listeners to connect with me personally on LinkedIn or Twitter. On Twitter, I am at Liz Sarah PR. And we would love to hear from more women entrepreneurs around the country about what's holding you back and what we should focus on to help you in 2020.
And you certainly can't beat that invitation. Again, Liz, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And you're more than welcome anytime. We've been speaking with Liz Sarah, chair of the nonpartisan National Women's Business Council, appointed by the president. And for all the details, visit nwbc.gov. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.